100 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a very special episode for our 600th here. First of all, I want to extend my thanks and gratitude to all the listeners out there, all you guys who chat me up on social media and engage. You're the reason I do this. And, you know, those that I've met in person at shows and conventions and everything, again, I thank you for taking time out of your life to listen to me talk about comics. Obviously I love comic books. I love the comic book medium. I love the creators and, just the stories and the characters, everything about it. You all know my philosophy about believing there's a comic book story out there for everyone. And, you know, as long as you're all there and as long as they keep making comics, I'll be here to talk about them. So a real special treat for you today. I wanted to do something different for the 600th, and I have a guest on today who is kind of going to give us a peek behind the scenes. And, you know, we're not going to talk about any specific comic book stories or comic books themselves. It's more a behind the scenes look at podcasting. And this guest that I'm got a chance to chat with, I have a lot in common with. Obviously, we're both comic book podcasters, but we also have a lot of the same beliefs and ideals, and we have similar reasons for why we podcast about comics. We know a lot of the same creators, so it was a real treat to have John Suntress join me and talk about podcasting and getting his start. He does the Word Balloon podcast, for those that don't know. I highly recommend listening to John. He always has creators on to talk about the nuts and bolts of story and the creative mind and the creative process and all that kind of stuff. So again, thanks to John for joining me. It was an awesome conversation. We probably could have talked for another few hours at least. And in fact, once I stopped recording, we did chat for about another 30 minutes. So it was really great to have John on, and once again, I thank him, and I thank all you listeners for sticking with me. You know, 600 episodes is nothing to sneeze at, and you know, hopefully I'll be around to do 600 more, or 2600 more. I mean, who knows? At this point, no plans on stopping, and it's I love what I do. I love podcasting and talking about comics, and you guys are all a big part of that. So thanks again. And I hope you all enjoy the interview with John Suntress from Word Balloon. All right, listeners, a real special treat for you today as we celebrate our 600th episode. We have a guest on today. I would consider him to be the godfather of comic book podcasting, and we'll get into all that. John Suntress, man, it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Oh, Jace, it's my pleasure, and congratulations on your 600th episode. Tell me what year you started.
So I started in 2014, started in 2013 as a YouTube channel, and then the post-production on video, as you know, takes so much longer. So we transitioned over to doing the podcast stuff, and, you know, about once a week, twice a week. And then this year, just rededicated myself, wanted to get there. I mean, as you know, it's a golden age of comics right now. There's so many great stories.
Absolutely.
And I just want more people reading comics. And so I decided, you know, this year I'm going to try to go daily.
Wow.
Yeah. And we're actually,
that's very, very impressive. I have put out 800. I'm around 825. I don't think I hit 25 yet. And also, the first year I was doing podcasting, I had a different RSS feed. So the current feed only goes back to September of 06. And I started in May of 2005. But yeah, 13 years, and I've done 800 episodes and changed. So for you to do 600, and you've only been doing it for 4 years, wow, man, that's very impressive.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And again, it's all due to content. You know, there's so much great
absolutely
comic book stories out there, and I tell people all the time, I'm just trying to match up the right comic book story with the right person and get more people reading comics. I mean, the fact that the movies and TV shows are doing great, hey, that's gravy. I consider that gravy, but you know,
yeah,
the core medium where this came from is comics, and I want more people reading. I mean, I just want more people reading in general, comic books specifically.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir. No, I feel the same way. Although I have to be honest, And I remember on old panels with other comic book podcasters as we've gone around the horn. I mean, I have to admit my first exposure to the characters probably was, and I will be 54 before the year is out. The Batman 66 show in reruns in the 70s, but still, and the very early 70s, and also the 67 Ralph Bakshi Spider-Man show. So those were really, and of course George Reeves Superman, and even the Green Hornet, I suppose you could put him in there, and the Lone Ranger. So yeah, that was all my early exposure was television before I was really purchasing books on my own. And then also, and this might be answers one of your first questions, you sent me the list, which I appreciate. Before I was purchasing comics on my own with my allowance at probably 7 years old or 8 years old, I would get the occasional, you know, gift stack of, you know, God, I hate to date myself, but they were probably still 12 and 15 cent comics when I was first reading them. But I do think, much like a lot of people today, my first exposure to the characters was on television. So,
yeah, to be fair, mine probably was too. Probably the Super Friends cartoon is probably, sure, you know, 3 or 4 years old watching that and falling in love. So, but before we get too deep into it, John, we probably should, in case some of our listeners aren't familiar, and I may be cannibalizing my own listener base here, they're all going to move over to listening to you. But honestly,
I hope not.
Listen to both, because this is one of the main comic podcasts I listen to. So tell everybody, John, like what's your deal? Tell them all about what you do.
No problem. Yeah, I host the Word Balloon podcast. I started it in May of 2005. It's at wordballoon.com. It's everywhere where you can get podcasts. I haven't gone to Spotify yet. I haven't gone to iHeartRadio yet on their podcast platforms, but Stitcher and all the other usual places to find podcasts. And yeah, it's been great. My focus is doing interviews, mostly one-on-one with comic creators, but every now and then I'll get someone else from pop culture, or the occasional television guest, the occasional filmmaking guest or acting guest as far as films. And yeah, it's been great, man. I always use George Burns's line, the old comedian, when he was talking about radio comedy in the 30s. And he said, we were all in the top 10 because there were only 8 of us. and yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. I think Comic Geek Speed beat me to it by like 3 months. And Fanboy Radio out of Texas, Scott Hines was doing it for a couple of years, both at his college station of Texas Christian University, and also then when podcasting became a thing, he brought Fanboy there. But I mean, I remember hearing him streaming on internet radio on the Texas University station. And yeah, I just kind of decided, you know, after hearing these, you know, other people, I hadn't heard Comic Geek speak. But Adam Curry put out a big article in Wired magazine in February of 2005 about the power of podcasting. And for my first 15 months, I was just posting these interviews as MP3s at wordballoon.com. And one of my listeners around the end of the summer of 2006 is like, you know, you really are doing a podcast. And I went back to that Adam Curry Wired thing. And I'm like, well, yeah, maybe I should post it over at iTunes. That might be a good idea. And again, this was, you know, September 2006 thinking. So here we are today where, you know, good Lord, you can't walk down the street with swinging a cat without hitting another podcaster out there.
Yeah, definitely. Now, was it a pretty steep learning curve, like once you decided to do it? Or was it gradual because you did the MP3 thing first and then transitioned actually
posting? I suppose it was gradual because, I didn't mention this, I have a radio background. I have been a broadcaster in Chicago since, in 1989, occasionally and full time since 1992. And, so, you know, 26 years full time radio work and, started in, talk radio, was a DJ prior to that in Central Illinois when I was going to school at Illinois State University. I always wanted to be on radio. I more so even than television because of the intimacy of audio. And, I just did. I mean, and truly, 24-hour station information stations were the internet of its day. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really remember being a kid and on the weekends dial twisting and listening to news stations or talk stations, and it was fantastic. You know, because you know they never turned off the lights, they never signed off, and you know instead of just showing reruns or infomercials, certainly in today's polluted television landscape, you know it was live entertainment. So it was great, and some people had amazing overnight shows that they'd play comedy bits, and really when you think about it, it was the audio equivalent of, like, you know, finding yourself in a video rabbit hole online and watching a bunch of interviews or random scenes and things like that. Radio was doing the same thing as the internet does now. So that to me was like, I want to be there. And that's when I really, you know, I went into communications and journalism, got my first couple jobs. But yeah, found myself working for the sports talk station in 1992 and worked for them until 2001. Then I worked for Sporting News Radio until 2006. And then I had an interlude during which I created Word Balloon, was out of radio for about a year and a half, got back in, was making commercials from 2007 till 2016. So about, 9 years working for this group of three stations in Chicago. And then my current job is I work for the CBS Chicago News Station, and I do traffic reporting, live traffic reporting in the overnights. And sadly, Chicago has enough traffic that we do need somebody at 3 a.m. to tell you what the traffic is like on the expressways and the tollways. So, it's been a very interesting radio ride. But about mid-career, I really wanted to do my own thing. And I was kind of getting just through attrition and the fact that there were other people at these radio stations that were as talented or maybe in the eyes of program directors more talented, they would get, you know, on-air jobs. And I was kind of shunted to the production end of things, which I didn't mind. I love radio production. That's why I love making podcasts and stuff. And also to answer your question about any sort of learning curve, no, it wasn't that hard because, again, I'd already been producing a lot of audio. I just wanted to generate euphemistically tape, but, you know, audio of me doing interviews to show my own hosting skills and reporting skills to maybe eventually get a different job at a station that would want me to be on air more. And instead, I created Word Balloon, and it's kind of become its own thing. And I can't live on it, but it's been a nice supplemental income and a great audience that appreciates what I'm doing and opened doors for, I was a talking head on a television show a couple of years ago called Prophets of Science Fiction. I've got another show that's coming out. I don't know when, but I imagine sometime this month, History Channel has it. It's called The Unexplained with the conspiracy host Jimmy Church hosting. And we did an episode about a plot to kill JFK 3 weeks before Dallas that happened in Chicago. And I do a couple interviews for that segment. And I'm featured on that show. And that was all through Word Balloon. Had nothing to do with my radio background. Wow, so there's my long answer.
That's awesome. Well, and I love that you kind of have the sports background too, because a lot of what I intended this to be is kind of like an inside baseball, you know, and clearly you're going to get the reference. But, because I just sure. Found comic book podcasting and the origins of it, and you were there, you know, in the beginning, and a lot of them have fallen by the wayside. But it's yep. Nice to go back and talk to the people that were kind of there at the beginning. So when you decided sure. that you wanted to do a podcast and do something kind of on your own, whether it was, you know, to pad the resume or just to get experience, what made you choose to do comics rather than sports or another interest of yours?
Because I love comics. And also, I was still working for the Sporting News Radio Network. And one of my big sports that I covered and got to cover for a long time was boxing. For 16 years between print and broadcasting, I covered boxing from 1989 till 2006. So I guess 17 years. And I didn't want it to be a conflict of interest working for Sporting News Radio. And I was scratching that itch on the air, going to Vegas and New York and big fights and getting to cover a lot of major bouts. So, you know, I like I said, I did things for Sporting News Radio's website because they were very – Paul Allen, one of the Microsoft billionaires that just recently died in the last – I believe this year.
Yeah.
He owned Sporting News and he owned a couple teams in Seattle. And he was very, you know, it was a typical kind of internet startup, even though Sporting News Magazine and radio existed before he acquired them. And in fact, I even offered him Word Balloon, as a feature because he also has the science fiction magazine or science fiction museum in Seattle. And I noticed that they were doing a comic book workshop for kids and, hey, you know, draw with artists and they'll help you learn how to draw. And so, you know, they were big on like, hey, if you have an interesting idea and you think it would work for the company, send an email to this department and, you know, we'll let you know what we think. So I'm like, hey, if you would be interested, maybe as a way to, you know, get people into the website and eventually want to go to the museum, I'd be happy to do interviews with comic book creators and stuff because, you know, again, I love the medium. I'm still reading. And I think I could do, you know, some interesting interviews. And the guy wrote back and said, I forget who the specific person was, but he's like, hey, man, that sounds like a great idea. We're not interested, but you should do that on your own. I think that sounds terrific. And thankfully I did, you know, like I said, I started May 10th, 2005. And, yeah, man, I, like you, I started with four episodes first. Brian Azzarello, and we talked about 100 Bullets. Joe Gentile, I want to make sure I got it the right four. Probably not. Joe Gentile is the publisher of Moonstone Books. They don't publish as many comic books as they used to, but they take a lot of internet or intellectual properties that we all know, like the Green Hornet, the Night Stalker, the great 70s television show, and he'll do illustrated – they're short story collections or full novels that have illustrations in them as well. They're great. But he was publishing a lot of comics back then. My buddy Douglas Klaba, who's a fine – painter, cover artist, and interior artist, excellent comic book artist. And I'm, of course, blanking on the fourth person. But I figured I'd, you know, start with four. And yeah, man, I've been going nonstop ever since. And I love it, and I love the medium, and it's been fantastic. So, yeah, I just felt like it was a great subject that wasn't being tapped. Like I said, literally, there were just a handful of shows in that first year of like 2004 or 5. There was a guy, and I can't remember, Neil, and I want to say Neil Gorman was his name. And he had a show called Comixology well before the digital marketplace. And it was just him, you know, reviewing his list of books. Augie DeBleek, a fine comic book resources CBR reporter for years and critic, he had a Books of the Week, what he liked and what he didn't like podcast in that first year of 05. And like you said, I mean, yeah, a lot of them have gone by the wayside since. But I really love it. I'm still fascinated by the process, the inside baseball of it. And, yeah, it's still very interesting to me. And again, all the various changes, whether it's market changes or the way politics has unfortunately crept into, both the printed page, but also I think, a hot debate between certain comic book readers. It's interest. We live in interesting times, and the comic book market and, creative side are very much a part of it.
Yeah, and so you grew up reading comics, always a fan. You're one of those people that's never taken a break. They've always been a part of your life.
Well, I'll confess, I think it was during that same time as a lot of kids, that post-college period where you had no money.
Yeah.
So I would say late 80s until mid 90s, because I did start going to a comic shop again in the mid 90s. I happened to see Marvel's and Kingdom Come on the shelves. I bought those specifically, but really didn't come back fully into the hobby until 1998 or 99, because Kevin Smith and Joe Quesada's Daredevil brought me back. And around that time when the Marvel's Ultimate line started, I was curious about Bendis on Ultimate Spider-Man, but even more curious when I heard his background that he had been writing crime comics. And, pardon me, I'm a big fan of the genre, and especially when it's done well. And good Lord, you know, Brian and Ed Brubaker and Greg Rucka, good Lord, I mean, amazing comics. So yeah, all those guys very early on had my attention, and here we are.
And so it was a natural progression. I'm going to do a podcast, and it's going to be about my other love other than sports. It's going to be about comics.
Well, yeah, because I felt it would be unique to hear creators, you know, talking. I mean, and one of my very early interviews was with Walter Simonson, and we talked about Star Wars, but we talked about not only the comic itself, but its position as for so long in between the first movie and Empire. The comic book was one of the few ongoing side Star Wars things that people could check out. I suppose the comic strip as well. I don't really remember the years of the comic strip and if it consistently was printed beyond the release of the first movie or not. But, you know, yeah, so, I mean, we're all spoiled these days with the amount of paperbacks and not to mention cartoons and other properties and even side movies as we're getting now of something like Star Wars. But back then, and I mean, immediately, you know, Star Wars was a cultural shift and a big, you know, milestone in pop culture. And so everyone was rabid for more story. And one of the few places they could get it was Marvel Comics. So even I felt it could be an interview that wasn't so inside baseball-y, and that, you know, even a casual person would be like, oh, that's interesting. You know, the only place that new Star Wars material was being created was for the Marvel Comics. So I thought Walt was a perfect person to talk to about that. And yeah, so I mean, that was the thing. I thought that would be even more hopefully interesting to an entertainment entity of, oh, this guy is, you know, talking about an interesting part of pop culture. And also, let's not forget, in 2005, Sin City, so many other things were starting to pop. The X-Men movies were in full force. The Raimi Spider-Man movies were in full force. And in fact, War Balloon even started as a video documentary about how comic books were impacting film and television then, back again in 2005. And my video guy kind of flaked out on me. So I took a lot of those initial interviews that I had. Oh, Max Allen Collins was another guy that I had spoken to. Max has had amazing comic book runs, if you don't know. Back in the 80s, he was the guy that made Jason Todd a criminal when he was a kid, and he stole the Batmobile's tires in a quick reboot of Jason Todd's background. So yeah, it was those four, you know, interviews that we started to videotape for this documentary. But like I said, my videographer kind of flaked out on me, so I still had the interviews. And I'm like, oh, let me make them MP3s and put them on a website and go to message boards to kind of get the word out of, hey, if you like, you know, Creator X, I just did an hour-long interview with them. Here's the link. That kind of thing.
Yeah, now, in the early days when people didn't even really, you know, before podcasts really kind of hit the mainstream culture, did you reach out to people to get them to come on and they'd be like, well, what's a podcast? Did you have that hurdle?
Yeah. But I also like kind of had a, I wouldn't call it a form letter, but essentially it was a template to write, you know, customize emails and say, hi, I have this radio background. I mean, and luckily the sports talk station that I first worked at, The Score, was also a CBS radio station. So that's the thing I could say. And also I had done enough occasional television that I was like, hey, I've got a background. I've been on CBS radio. I've been on Fox Sports. I've been on this, that. And I'm doing these interviews. And also Jonah Weiland of Comic Book Resources, right, the original owner of CBR, he was doing the occasional audio interview, a phone interview with somebody, and posting it at CBR. And again, it was new enough, and I would describe podcasting as kind of internet radio. And so, yeah, it was fine. And again, most of the people that I reached out to, well, initially were contemporary artists and writers that were in their 30s, and they were techie enough that if they hadn't heard of a podcast, they could understand. It's interesting. I mean, I still find, especially when I talk to an older creator, the occasional ones that they're aware of the word podcast, but maybe, you know, have never obviously listened to one. So that is kind of funny that even though obviously I think podcasting is more and more relevant, and I'm sure you feel the same way, every now and then we get statistics of people, how many people are listening to at least one podcast a week. And no, I think it's a golden age of comics that is dovetailing into citizen media. That's the best blanket description I've heard for what we do.
Yeah,
and it's true, man. I mean, hey, it's narrowcasting at its best. And it's, hey, if you like, you know, arm wrestling, I'm sure there's an arm wrestling podcast out there.
Yeah, and it's also
a very good one.
Yeah, it's also about fostering the community, right? I mean, I don't know if you found this to be the case, especially in the early days when it seemed, because I kind of the impression that I get, you know, coming to podcasting later is, yeah, that 2005, 2006 era, it seemed like a lot of people wanted to try it and there was a big explosion, and, you know, now the attrition has happened and a lot of people haven't stuck with it. But over the ensuing years, the community of podcasting has grown and there are so many different topics covered, as you yourself mentioned. So, but in the early days, it was kind of the Wild West. There wasn't a lot of rules and nobody necessarily knew what was gonna catch on. But what I have found now, and again, you can speak to whether it was like this in the beginning, is that podcasters are, we all pull for each other. We all, you know, a rising tide floats all boats, and we're not looking to like back, much like the comic community. It's a small community and everybody pulls for everybody else. It's not necessarily about competition. Was it like that in the beginning as well?
For the most part, yes, but there were pockets of people that decided this is our thing and we're really not interested in, you know, hey, they almost considered you the enemy, which was so ridiculous and so petty. And I'm pleased to say that most of those people are probably not in it anymore, or if their show has survived, they are no longer on it on a consistent basis to really be considered one of the regular voices. And yeah, because again, yeah, there's a little bit of pettiness. There was a little bit of pettiness here and there. I will confess to a frustration I had with certain shows that had access to correct information in term, and nothing like as nerdy as in episode four, that was Dick Sargent and not Dick York, you know, something stupid like that.
Right.
But like, I remember one show, and I won't name it, but they were very frustrated of the failure of the Green Lantern animated series in terms of that it only had one season.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was like, oh my God, you know, it was so great. The stories were fantastic. And I chimed in on their message board and said, well, guys, you know, that's made for a Y7 audience. And, you know, they didn't reach the numbers in the Y7 demographic that they were looking for. Therefore, it was canceled. And the hosts and their listeners, well, but they had great, you know, adult ratings. So certainly they're happy about that. And I'm like, no, they're really not. This show was made to sell toys to 7-year-olds. It failed to do that. So they're moving on to the next thing. And no, I'm sorry, you're wrong. Trust me, I'm in broadcasting, I know. But also it bothered me because this same show would have people from the animation companies come on. And even an animator, like an anchor or a person that physically does the art and isn't an executive can tell you the same information.
Yep.
Because it's their industry. And I'm like, you guys talk to industry people. If you don't believe me, you know, say, you know, talk to one of them. And their audience is very angry at me. And, you know, that's fine. I left. It's fine. And that happened at a couple other message boards. And it was never in any mean way. But I also understand their standpoint, maybe their point of view of, hey, man, we're just a bunch of guys. People go into podcasting for different reasons. And I wasn't looking to build any sort of media empire. Like I said, I was trying to get the next broadcasting gig. But again, truly entertain my audience with you know, I mean, I liked what I do. And it was thrilling that people gave a damn enough to come on and listen and you know, to reach a nice multiples of thousands of listeners. Oh, my God, that's fantastic and a great compliment. But yeah, you know, some of the podcasts are just, hey, we're just hanging out talking about comics. Screw you that we don't have the right information. Shut up. Leave us alone. And it's like, all right.
Yeah.
I'll confess to that.
Yeah. I mean, do your thing. But I mean, if it were me, if I make a mistake, I want somebody to correct me. That's just the way I'm wired. You know, I don't want to be.
Well, but again, man, you know, it's like, you know, hey, man, you're harsh and our mellow. Shut up. We're just having fun. And I'm like, all right, sorry. And then also there was another podcast that, again, I won't identify, but I thought they were being really mean to an older artist that they felt, you know, wasn't as sharp as he was in the 70s. And it was funny because one of the hosts is around my age. And I'm like, hey, man, let's see your 50-year-old self run a 50-yard dash against your 20-year-old self. And let's see how things go. I'm like, come on, man. I'm like, yeah. And also this particular podcast host, I think, positioned himself to be a great caretaker of the older artists and especially the Golden Age artists and really put them on Mount Olympus. And oh, these masters, and really, like, they were, as I told Howard Chaykin on a recent episode, the Keebler Elves, you know, just living in the magic tree, making the cookies and stuff. And so that really bothered me too. And again, his audience, well, shut up, you're hurting our party. I'm like, all right, come on. So that kind of, I'll admit to that kind of behavior. But no, as far as like truly, hey, we're all doing the same thing. What are you doing? How are you? You know, it's like, it's almost like showing up at a car appreciation thing and everybody comes in their classic cars and they open the hood and it's like, all right, so what engine are you using? What kind of carbs are you, you know, carburetors are you doing? Whatever. You know, it's the same. I feel the same way. And because we're all learning this thing too. I mean, got it. You know, it started in 2004, 2005. So we're not even at 20 years yet of podcasting, and it's still a young medium. And I think it is changing it. It is growing. And so, yeah, share your information. I have no qualms about sharing information, but some people play it like poker and they don't want to know how many listeners. And also I love too, the measurements of some that some listeners will be like, well, you know, we get 20,000, you know, DLs or impressions a day. If that's it, they consider that listen. So I'm like, yeah, no, you don't. I'm like, YouTube is that classic example. All you have to do is click on it. Whether you stay for more than 5 seconds or not, it counts as a view. And it's like, yeah, I want my real numbers personally. I certainly want my real numbers. And, you know, I want to know how many people are listening, how long they're listening, how they get it. the whole shot as many details as I can.
And so, if they're enjoying
it's like, what's that?
And if they're enjoying it.
Well, absolutely. That goes without saying. And luckily, I think between emails and social media responses, it's like, no, I got, you know, and also, God, the greatest compliment of all is being at a convention and someone walking up and saying, I love Word Balloon. Or when I talk to creators for the first time and it's like, oh man, I can't, you know, and after they've been on, hey, I can't tell you how many of, you know, people in Artist Alley came up to me and told me how much they enjoyed you, you know, me being on your show. And that's the greatest compliment you can get.
Yeah, for me, it's I love it when I interview a creator, especially if it's one who's heard of me and, you know, through word of mouth or whatever. They've heard I'm a great interviewer. And then after they're like, well, everybody was right, man. You asked such interesting questions, because as you know, as a really great interviewer yourself, you know, the same old rote questions that, you know, people that that just do it to get a free press pass to a con, you know, and they could answer the creators could answer those questions in their sleep. So when you can get a creator to start thinking, and this is another thing I love about Word Balloon, is it's a conversation, you know.
Thank you.
It's not,
that's the intent.
Yeah, it's not a Q&A, it's a conversation. And so for me, that's always the best, when I have creators say, man, I love coming on your show because I love that you've read the material, because surprisingly enough, there are plenty of interviewers out there that aren't prepared.
Oh yeah.
Haven't read the material, you know.
Oh yeah.
Get
names. Do you still do convention floor interviews? Personally, I stopped doing them, God, like probably at least 6 to 8 years ago. I couldn't tell you the last convention that I honestly did a Artist Alley floor interview, because so many other people are doing them and doing exactly what you've described, and all the video setups and all that stuff. And it's just like, hey man, guess what? Especially when I meet a creator for the first time and ask them to come on, it's like, I don't want to talk to you here. You're here to make money at your table.
Yep.
And every moment you spend with somebody doing a video, and it's nice that they're accommodating to these people, and I don't wish them any, well, again, I don't mean this as a negative thing, but I'm like, let's meet. Here's my card. When we're both at home and relaxed, as we're doing now, Jace, let's have a conversation. I don't want 5 minutes on the floor. I don't want 10 minutes on the floor, because I'm keeping you from fans that did not get a press pass. That's another thing. And I am very, I sometimes will like spin on a dime when I realize, after I've been talking to a creator that I'm friendly with, and we're talking about old times, and suddenly I look behind me and there's three people waiting.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
bad.
Oh, Jesus, I'm so sorry. Yep. Please talk to him. Hey, man, we'll see each other later. We'll see each other tonight, all weekend, whatever. But yeah, that's the last thing I want to do, is keep truly. I mean, it may sound, you know, like, go get over yourself, John. But truly, it's like, yeah, no, man, you guys paid for this. This is your moment. You've been waiting to talk to Peter David, you know, probably for years. And this is your first opportunity. Good Lord. Have the conversation with the man. I'll talk to him next time. You know?
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I still do them, but I keep them very brief, and most of the time it's in anticipation of doing something later on. But I always always say, you know, I'd rather do it later, better audio quality, more time to talk. We're both relaxed, as you say. But sometimes they're like, well, you know, I'd rather do it now, because I don't know when I'll get another chance to do it. And so, like when I was at New York Comic Con, you know, a couple months ago, I did maybe 8 or so real short ones. And,
okay.
You know, just like you said about, you know, looking behind you, and I always tell them, it's just audio. If anybody comes up, please, please, please do not make them wait. They're the reasons that we are here, and I can edit it out after. But I'm really trying to get away from it. Like I do fewer and fewer.
I think after we do it for a while, you realize. And actually, I have to confess, I guess the last year I did it was, now that I think of it, 2015. And it's funny, I haven't released the video yet, because really it was video that I was collecting as a pilot for a potential television series. And unfortunately, obviously, it didn't come through. I would say that is the last time I did floor interviews. And again, it was at the producer's insistence, that it's like, oh, but it's nice having the backdrop of the convention and the people walking by. And I get all that. And truly, luckily, I only bothered my very good friends that would, you know, knew what I was. I told them everything. I'm like, hey, you know, and it was John Hickman, and it was Paul Miatti, Dan Parent from Archie, and just gracious people that gave me a, like, hey, do you mind if we do this for like 20 minutes? I think Gail Simone might have been in there as well. And again, because I've been doing it for, you know, at that point, 9 years or 10 years, It's like, you know, they understood they're, you know, and I feel a kinship. I don't know how many creators you've gotten to be better acquaintances with, but I feel a kinship with the comic book creators in terms of, hey, we're trying to all do our own thing. We're trying to make something and gather an audience. So, you know, again, another comic book podcaster, it's like, well, what we do isn't creative. And I'm like, I couldn't disagree more.
Yeah.
Of course it's creative. What are you talking about? And it's like, yeah, whatever. And it was funny because we were with a couple of like writer, artists, comic book people, and they're like, of course it's creative. What's wrong with you, man? It's just like, seriously, it's very interesting, the preconceived notions of various people who do podcasting. And again, they're doing it for very different reasons. So, I mean, I think of us as entertainment journalists. And again, another podcaster was mad at me and it's like, well, you're not a journalist. I'm like, that's very interesting because I've been in broadcasting and it's kind of part of my industry. Please tell me your definition of a journal. Yeah. Well, you know, it's purely news and, you know, no, all you're doing is advertising somebody's book. And I'm like, you ever hear of entertainment journalism? I go, you think Barbara Walters when she's talking to a celebrity? I'm like, that's journalism. No, it isn't. I'm like, well, I'm sorry, but the industry would disagree with you. So,
yeah, no,
but by all means,
I agree. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I definitely feel a kinship with the creators because, you know, it's interesting. And I don't mean to disparage anyone who's doing it for a different, you know, whatever reason you're creating content, you know, that's your thing. And
yeah,
you know, it's, you know, freedom of speech and whatever, do your thing,
100%,
you know, live and let live. But, you know, for me, I try to be prepared and I try to be professional and I'm doing my best to put the creator's work in the best light possible because, again, I want more people reading comics. So I definitely feel that kinship that they have. They're trying to get their story in front of as many eyes as possible. That's not everybody. You know, not everybody's willing to put in the effort and do the work. You know, they're doing it for, like you said, whatever particular reason they're doing it for. So I think that a lot of times when you reach out to creators, you know, if they haven't met you before and they don't know, you know, they get hundreds of requests, you know, to talk.
Absolutely.
You know, and so until they get a chance to meet you and see what you do and if your name's out there, like Word Balloon is, it does start to have some more credibility. And that's another thing that gives me gratification that even sometimes creators I meet for the first time, oh yeah, I've heard of the Comic Source. Yeah, I definitely would love to come on.
That's fantastic, man. No, and again, I agree and I appreciate what you said, but I mean, I truly try to be and feel that I am as humble as possible. And every time a new listener will email me for the first time or meet me at a convention, I am Johnny Appleseed. I really appreciate every single person that says that. It is still partially a surprise and a pleasant one that they are discovering me. And the same goes for creators. And also, like you said, I had to introduce myself to a couple classic creators at the last New York show, and that's totally fine. I don't expect them to know who I am.
Yep.
The good news is I can tell them, hey, you don't know me, but creator B, creator C, creator D that are I know for a fact have worked with you many times in the past, they can all vouch for me.
Yep.
And that's when I'm face-to-face with somebody. And it was great. It's like, oh, they're all my friends. I'm like, I know, and I'm pleased to say that after interviewing a lot of those people for 12 or 15 years, they're now my friends too. So, you know, I'm like, please come on. Oh, sure, man. Here's my information. Okay, great. You know, and there was definitely a couple of those that happened in New York for the first time, and it was wonderful. So, and I've also, man, I was so lucky. Terrificon out of Connecticut, I did their show in August. And my God, what a pleasant association that immediately put me in touch with about around 10 creators that were classic creators from the 70s through the 2000s that I never had the opportunity to speak to yet. And all of a sudden, Roger Stern and Christopher Priest and Roy Thomas for the first time. First time at Jim Starlin too. I was going to say, I've met Jim a few times in the past, but never had him on. And good Lord, I mean, literally a dozen between one-on-one shows and panels that I ended up doing at Terrificon. Just incredible content. And, you know, the organizer works with my friend Franco, who is of Art Franco and Tiny Titans fame. Franco vouched for me. The guy who runs Terrificon, Mitch Halleck, also does a podcast himself. And again, we're around the same age. And he listened and he's like, man, I've never heard of your show. It's great. Oh, please moderate some of the panels. Fantastic, man. It was a wonderful thing. And again, it just opened all these doors to a bunch of creators that I didn't have the opportunity to you know, get a first face to face and get them interested in coming on the show. So in promoting the convention and also at the convention itself, incredible connections. And for me, it was such a thrill because a lot of these people were my favorite writers and artists already as a younger man. So Paul Kupperberg and certainly Roger Stern and God, Mike Barr. Oh, one of my favorite Batman writers. Couldn't have been nicer. Great, tremendous guy. Christopher Priest, what a genius of a guy. And couldn't be sweeter. And I had this amazing Black Panther panel with him, Don McGregor, all these amazing, you know, Bob Allman, who's a great inker, Afua Richardson, who works on the Ta-Nehisi Coates books now. That was a tremendous panel. So yeah, I've been very, very lucky.
Yeah, I would have to say just kind of on the same topic, but not on, definitely not on script. Man, the Superman panel from Terrificon was my favorite of those episodes.
Oh, thanks, man. The School of Rock was driving us.
Yeah, right.
They were next door cranking amazing music, but it's like, hey guys, organizers, what are you doing?
Yep.
I'm like, no, man. Mitch was great. Mitch was like, John, I'm so sorry. I'm like, Mitch, you would love this panel. Yeah, thanks, man. I would love that. I love the Robin panel on Sunday and how so many of them, especially the great Denny O'Neill, who again, my God, I've been reading that man since I was 5 years old. What a great writer. And it's like, so tell me about what your thoughts are on Robin. And immediately Denny's like, I never understood the point of Robin. Kid's 12 years old. He's in short pants, a red vest. Batman's in the shadows. This kid's a walking target. Makes no sense. And Starlin's like, well, I killed a Robin when I was writing Batman, so you know how I feel. And finally, Mike Barr's like, well, I actually like Robin, and here's why. And it was great because Pete Tomasi and Tim Seeley were the modern writers. And Tim is like, I've known Tim since I started podcasting, and he's another Chicago guy. One of the smartest guys in comics. I love talking to him. And just great high concepts. And can work for DC and Marvel when he needs to. And he's like, Jesus, man, that was a terrible panel. I said, I thought it was fantastic. He goes, you got a bunch of 8-year-olds sitting out in the audience all bummed out because they're hearing a bunch of senior citizens complain about why they hate Robin. And it's true. So ever since then, every time I see him, I go into a little kid voice and go, but I like Robin.
Robin, get off my lawn.
Exactly, man. And he's right, because there were all these like cosplayer titans and stuff. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm totally harsh in their melon tonight. I'm like, sorry, kids. Sorry about that, kids. I didn't mean to bum you out.
But no, the School of Rock thing, if you've done podcasting or interviewing for any length of time at shows, it's happened to you. It happened to me at Phoenix Comic Con this last year. They had some live radio shows and they put it wasn't even a press room. They just put up some of those like cubicle walls and then had a desk there and they'd bring people in and do the Q&A and it's like, I'm trying to record audio and these people are playing, you know, mariachi music literally 2 feet from me.
Like, really? I
thought this was Marvel, a good idea.
Marvel at New York or San Diego, you know, they got the PA system going at their booth.
Yep.
And oh God, DC at San Diego for the last couple of years will do live stage interviews. And again, I get it. It's for the people in the booth. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's a massive size booth, so they're gonna get a nice crowd. And it's great. I was gonna interview a DC creator and the PR person is like, well, you have to do it here. At the booth. And I'm like, but you guys are blaring this PA.
Yep.
And I go, this is audio. Well, this is where you have to do it. I go, well, then I'm not doing it. I'm like, I felt bad. And I'm like, to the creator, I'm like, hey, no offense. He's like, no, not taking it. I get it. And really the PR person who's no longer there is like, fine. I'm just like, well, I'm sorry. I get what you guys are doing here. That's fine. You didn't think to maybe have another room? And it's funny because ever since then, certainly New York, they really have their own little private area, both for video and audio. And, you know, and it's certainly off the main floor. So it is nice and quiet. So somebody must have beyond me complained. But yeah, it was,
I think the
it's
last...
always been a bit, it's not currently this way, but sometimes it's gotten a little contentious with me and, specifically DC's PR division. I have a feeling, and again, I don't mean to be mean or condescending, but I have a feeling a lot of these people came from Burbank. And not from comics, and really were like, what's the problem?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, the problem is, you know, they would treat the comic creators as they would the television and film stars. And it's like, it's a smaller community. And that's one of the great and worst things about comics, because that's when you get the trolls too, that feel very comfortably to tell you, Dan Slott, I've enjoyed Spider-Man for 50 years of reading. You've only been writing him for 10 years. I get him a lot more than you do. Yeah. He's my character a lot more than it's yours.
Yep.
And it's like, all right, good luck, man. That's a great attitude.
Yeah, I think the last few years, DC's done the two-story thing, and it's been a little bit better, but I didn't even do any. I think I did only one interview at the show last year.
I hear you, man. I didn't do any. I know. I remember that thing, too. Yeah. And I'm just like, yeah, but it's still open air.
It is. Well, I don't know.
It's not that much of a help, man. It's not like we're 50 stories up.
No, not at all. So. And I don't know if you know this, but they just announced, and I think this is a terrible idea. So DC at San Diego next year is going to be integrated into the Warner Brothers booth, you know, back in that corner in the entertainment section that always gets super crowded whenever they have a signing.
Yeah.
They're not even going to be in the comic section. Who thought that was a good idea?
Well, they're probably saving money, because I do know that those booths are hefty six-figure price tags each convention, and that's a lot of money. And I'm sure someone's looking at a balance sheet and going, okay, we want to be at the, you know, we want to represent at shows. And again, I that doesn't surprise me based on how they change the way they do things in New York. And because then also I know New York had a problem for a while where a lot of knockoff badges were being, you know, handed out. And I mean, literally, they had homeless people hanging out in the booths and like sitting on the carpet and just being a lump on the floor. And, you know, the DC people like, can you go? No. And there wasn't enough security from the convention to get rid of them. So I think that's why DC finally took themselves off the main floor of New York. And now, I don't know the last time you were at a New York show, but yeah, they're at the way far end of the Javits Center in a little pocket corner.
Mm-hmm.
And it is. It's a lot more manageable. And that's where the signings happen, and it's much calmer. And So
well, they do have
That doesn't surprise me. And no, you're right. It's a horrible idea because, yeah, those areas. I mean, I remember I wasn't at this year's Comic-Con. I was at last year's. And yeah, Sunday there was like a Supernatural signing happening at the Warner booth. And it was, you couldn't get through.
Yeah, I can't.
The amount of people just standing there.
Yeah, I mean, I typically will stop by the DC booth as I'm going, you know, from place to place, you know, taking meetings or whatever. And, I'll stop in just to see who's there. I can't imagine I'm going to do that when it's back in the corner. It's a huge crowd. But, you know.
Yeah, it's, and again, I mean, as you said, and I feel the same way, it's so much better to get these creators at home when they got time and they're just relaxed.
Yep.
And you want to have a real conversation with them. So. Yeah, no, I'm let the others fight the frustrations of conventions, and I'll get a very nice PR message. Hey, we have these people there. Who do you want to talk to? And it's like, thanks anyway. I'm fine. You know.
Yep. Yeah, so, and they have a new president over there, and I'm wondering if that's, you know, like you said,
the Warner Brothers president.
Yeah, yeah, because you know Diane Nelson, you know, is gone for good. So
yep.
You have something to do with it.
No, it'll be. Well. I mean, I think we're all watching what is going to happen top to bottom, from the films to the way they handle conventions. And, you know, I do think DC, purely from a publishing standpoint, I love all the initiatives that they're planning to do. John Cunningham is one of their execs that I've had a lot of conversations with over the years. And he and I just had a nice face to face at C2E2 about like those Zoom books and the other things. It's like they are going publishing where kids are, that aren't walking into the stores,
right?
But probably would get excited about reading in their Scholastic catalog. Oh wow, there's a Superman graphic novel. Oh, I'd read that. You know, stuff like my Art and Franco are working on Superman of Smallville, and it's about 14-year-old Superman growing up, but they're not calling it Superboy, and it's great. And I mean, honestly, I've been, because they're my friends, I've gotten to see some preview art and concepts that they want to bring to the book, and it's going to be amazing. And that's a smart move. And then again, like, you know, we'll see what happens with the movies, and we'll, you know, Aquaman is still technically, I think, part of the old regime. But moving forward, what do you think of Titans, the TV show?
You know, I think it's a little dark for my take.
I agree.
I kind of feel like
I agree.
You know, it's the same. I feel the same way about it that I felt when I went to see Batman versus Superman. It's like, okay, if I just think about this as it's just another multiverse. It's just a different version. It's not the version I love. But if I accept it for that, then. But yeah,
I'm way behind. I've only seen three episodes. And I agree with you. And at first, especially 10 minutes into the first episode, I'm like, oh, man, is this another Suicide Squad? Please don't be another Suicide Squad. And thankfully, as different as it is, it's interesting enough. And I haven't reached the point yet where they're together. But all the different separate storylines are interesting enough. You know, yeah, it's not our Dick Grayson that we've grown up with reading in the books. But it's okay. And yeah, I'm willing to, you know, certainly. All right, let's see what happens. Give them 10 episodes or 12, whatever it's going to be. And by the way, it beats the alternative of not making TV shows and movies. Yep. And truly every misfire of a film or a television, well, specifically film, is always 2 to 3 years away from being corrected with a better movie.
Mm-hmm.
So as bummed as people were about Batman versus Superman and Suicide Squad, and I was one of them, I'm like, the good news is you can make another movie and correct this at the earliest 3 years, because that's what happened with the Schumacher Batman movies as they got ridiculous. And it took a couple years more, but we're in a different cycle of pop culture now where there's money to be made and they're not going to wait 7 years between, you know, movies and misfires and things. So, and I'm excited and intrigued by, you know, what we're hearing coming out of Disney in the future. I think that's exciting. So yeah, I mean, man, I'll tell you, the CW shows, I love them all. I feel a little fatigued because unfortunately they're stuck in that 20 plus episodes a year network television model.
Yep.
And I'm waiting for the Big Five to kind of understand and go, you know, something, you're right. We give. Fox is doing it a little bit with various shows. And of course, Gotham is coming back under a kind of a forced half season circumstance. But I really think, as I'm sure most of us do, it serves these properties better to have a much more focused 13 episode season rather than those bloated. And I've talked to producers and writers of the CW shows. And again, it's like, hey, we agree. It's just, we're screwed. We kind of have to do, you know, the order is for 24 episodes or 22 episodes. We got to give them 22 episodes. And I get it. And that's tough.
Well, not only that, but having something a little more focused and a little more streamlined that drops all at once, and then you can watch it at your own pace, you know?
Oh, absolutely. No, binge watching is great, but I also can appreciate the business model for, all right, here's an hour, come back next week. And it was when Quesada was still editor-in-chief at Marvel, and when what became described as decompressed stories, they're like, well, this is just like television. And each issue is its own episode. And I'm like, no, it's not like television, because I got to wait 30 days if it's on schedule.
Yeah.
And I like, and even back again, pre-binge watching, I'm like, that's a tall order in today's on-demand, consumption market.
Yep.
So yeah, it'll be interesting. And you're right. Binge watching is a big difference. And I wonder, you know, how long it will take again for the Big Five to change their business model. And they're obviously moving towards, and they already have streaming, you know, platforms for their, you know, network commercial paid for content. It's a big shift, and it's really, they haven't figured out a better way to make money other than the traditional, you know, weekly, here's a bunch of commercials in between each segment and stuff. And, you know, I don't know. I don't see that changing anytime soon, because somebody's going to have to pay for this stuff. Now, they might go to subscription, the Big Five as well, as these other channels are. I don't know. I really don't. And I love that too, because I think it's to our advantage, again, as citizen media content providers.
Yeah.
Because and believe me, I used to work for the big radio companies, and they puff out their chest and, well, this is what we're doing with podcasting. And it's like, you are full of it, because nobody knows where this
is. Yeah, you can't predict it.
No, of course not. And it's true. And truly, I've worked for several stuffed shirts who are very happy to tell me, well, you know, this is what you ought to be doing with podcasting. And it was great, because they would get podcast experts to come in and talk to them their board and their salespeople, and they would discover my show and go, you know, you got somebody working for you who's really doing great with podcasting, and you really should talk to them. And they never did. And it was amazing. And I truly, my last company that I worked for full time before, we're currently working for CBS News, they bought a third, Hubbard Broadcasting, they bought a third of Podcast One. And they own a third now of Podcast One. And they had a big meeting. Hey, you know, if any, we're getting into the podcasting business. If some of you employees know about it, we'd like you at this corporate meeting. And it was at their corporate offices out of state. They flew me in, we had the meeting. And then it was like, okay, well, you know, this is extra work, so you are going to have to pay us for it. And they all went silent. And I know that, you know, a lot of us in cities that had active podcasts, it was like, all right, when we figure out how we're going to pay for this, we'll get back to you. And it's like, yeah, okay, take it easy.
Yeah.
And thankfully, again, Werblin's my own thing. So it's like, all right, good luck. But all you've proven to me again is that you don't understand that, no, like, because they're like, well, you know, NPR really has a handle on what to do with podcasts. It's like, yeah, because they pay their people to make the podcast. I mean, that, or they find an underwriter sponsor to pay for the podcast. I'm like, yeah, again, the Keebler Elves are not making these things.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, this is, you know, time away from my family. This is blood, sweat, and tears, man.
Right. It might end up being a couple hours extra from the 8 hours that you're asking me to do now.
Yeah.
And no, it's not like I am, you know, sitting on my hands for 2 hours of that time I could spend on a podcast. No, and truly, nice people have told me that at CBS. Well, it's really actually it's Entercom. They want to do more with podcasting and stuff. But again, they're like, oh, well, we were kind of hoping you could take the existing content and turn those into podcasts. And a lot of these stations were former owned and operated CBS news stations. Like, yeah, we're already doing that. And so really, like, my programmer's like, hey, they're talking about podcasting, I'll let you know. And then he came back and said, yeah, they're kind of not ready to pay for it yet. I'm like, no problem. Take it easy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, as much as it is hard to predict, if you look back at when you started and where we are now, are there things that you can specifically point to that have changed?
Well, sure. Absolutely. I think, beyond making like through Instaprint or some of these other companies where, hey, buy a t-shirt, buy a coffee mug, do something like that. Jack Conte, who was the musician who created Patreon. I think Patreon is a big help. And it truly, much like digital comic people or whatever, hey, if you like my stuff, you can go directly to the audience and say, and I mean, you know, there was always PayPal and things like that. And I flirted with the idea of a paywall back in the day and, you know, have premium content. But also I'm just like, you know, I you do the public radio model of or television model of, do you like what I do? Can you help me out? I'm not asking for the moon.
Yep.
You know, give me a buck a month. Do you have a Patreon page?
No, I don't. I've toyed with the idea and I go back and forth on it.
Totally understand, man. I mean, especially coming from broadcast radio, I'm like, I believe in sponsors paying for content. Yep. And I do have sponsors at Word Balloon and everything. But, again, it's like, hey, I believe in what you do. And again, you're not going to get, you know, you're lucky if you get 1% of your audience or whatever.
Yep.
And truly, I appreciate the couple hundred people that are, you know, supporting me via Patreon. It's a big help. And, in this gig economy, I don't have a full-time job in radio currently. And I would rather put my efforts into the podcast and provide more content. If people like what I do and I always say it in my commercials, I'm like, hey, it's always going to be free. But if you like what I do, am I helping you enjoy the hobby of comic book reading more because of this content? And it's true. I think I do. I think, you know, I end up doing six to eight episodes a month and sometimes more. And it's like, no, it's quality stuff. And again, nothing against the people that do the roundtable of, well, this is what we bought this week and this is what we think. It's like, no, I'm talking to the creators,
yep,
giving them the platform to not only promote their books, but also you get to know them a little bit better. You get to know what kind of nerd shit they like. And sorry if you can't swear. I've been trying not to swear during our conversation. But yeah, you know, it's like, oh, I didn't know he liked to make ships in a bottle. I like that too. So the next time you go up to Creator Aid at a convention, hey man, I do that too. That's awesome. and you have a new connection, and it's an in to get that creator to know who you are and maybe spend 5 minutes talking to you rather than just signing your book and you're the next person in line, you know? So yeah, I also think it's to the creator's advantage, because traditional media is only now starting to get wise to the Robert Kirkmans and the various great creators that are making stuff. And, you know, they're getting a couple more minutes on the news or on Entertainment Tonight or whatever celebrity news magazine show there is out there these days. Or you get, I mean, God, how cool has it been that ABC, you know, before I think it was Civil War, that they did that like hour long Captain America retrospective, you know, stuff like that. That's amazing. Or good Lord, CW, they're promoting the Constantine animated movie. You know, it's like, give a whole hour to Constantine. That's awesome. You know, I mean, so they're wising up slowly. But again, meanwhile, you and I are like, you know, talking to these people all the time. And again, providing a couple hours of entertainment if you're on the treadmill or you're working out or you're running errands and stuff. And again, that's why I like audio, because, you know, you're not tied to watching it. And again, the flexibility of audio production, it's easier to make. You get it out there and people enjoy it.
Hopefully. Yeah, and I want to talk specifically about some of your favorite guests, favorite moments. But one more question before we move on from the inside baseball perspective from being there at the beginning. Like, do you feel there's more people doing podcasts than ever before? Is it less? Is it about the same? How do you feel?
I don't know, because I stopped counting way early on, like around 2007 or 2008. My friend Chris Niesman, who sadly no longer comic book podcast, but he's like, you know, I actually counted on iTunes. And again, this is like 2007 or 2008. And he said, there are more comic book podcasts than there are film critique podcasts.
Wow.
Exactly. And I started laughing too. And I'm just like, holy cow. So I give you a lot of credit only having done it since 2014, because I used to put it in astronaut terms. And I was like, okay, the 2005 people were the Mercury astronauts, were the Chuck Yeagers, Chuck Yeagers prior to that. So I even like Neil Gorman, who did it in 2004, he's Chuck Yeager. But anyone from 2005, I'm like, all right, you know, we're John Glenn, we're Alan Shepard, we're Gordon Cooper, you know, the Mercury 7. And then if it's 2006 to 2009, I'm like, all right, you guys are like the Geminis and stuff like that. Now you're like a space shuttle guy because you're still an astronaut and it's still very cool. But it's like, yeah, talk to the guys that were spamming a can and stuff, shooting in the early days, in the old timer days. And it's great because actually, Eric Gescovel, who writes Bordertown for Vertigo, great book. And we were talking. He goes, yeah, man, I've been listening to you since high school. I'm like, all right. And I really appreciate it. But by the same time, he's like, damn, I am old. All right. That's fine. No problem. But yeah, it's. No, so yeah, I don't know what the current count is, truly, back to your question, but I kind of don't want to know. And also, truly, you got to run your own race. You can't worry about how many are out there or whatever. You have to trust in your own ability and the content you're providing, and you got to love it. Yep. Because it really, having an audience is gravy. And it really is like, wow, thank you for giving a damn enough to listen to my stuff. Because, and it's like, Scott Porter, the actor from Friday Night Lights and well-respected geek and stuff, and a beautiful man. He's a good-looking guy. And I'm like, the first time I talked to him, I'm like, man, if I looked like you, the last thing I would be doing is listening to comic book podcasts. What is wrong with you? He's like, I'm engaged. I'm like, that's great. Spend more time with your fiance and less time listening to me. Because, you know, and again, I love what I do. And truly, I genuinely appreciate every listener. And it is a genuine surprise when it's somebody new and it's like, hey, that's great, man. And again, that means the future is bright. And then, you know, we're still in a growth period. So, yeah, I don't worry about who else is out there.
Yeah, it is so interesting, too, because, I mean, you know this. It's like it not only is it the quality of your content, but you've got to back it up. And what I mean by that is if you say you're going to release something at a certain day at a certain time – you know, you might get your audience, you know, depending on the quality of the content, they might give you a second chance, third, fourth, fifth chance. Forget about it, because there's so much other content out there.
That's true. But I'm it's funny. I I was very for, you know, it's obviously a sad week with the passing of Stan Lee.
Yeah.
I had already scheduled an interview with Fred Van Lente, former Marvel writer and fantastic comic book writer, and also fantastic geek novelist.
Yeah.
And geek playwright for that matter. We were going to talk about his book that came out a couple months ago called The Con Artist, which is a murder mystery that happens at San Diego Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
So we were already scheduled Monday afternoon, late Monday afternoon, to talk about that. And then everybody gets the news that Stan died. And he emailed me about an hour before the cast and said, hey, I got to do something for the BBC really fast. Can we push it back half hour? I said, sure, no problem. And I said, obviously, you know, if it's okay, I obviously want to talk about Stan. Because if you don't know, Fred also, with Ryan Dunleavy, did the comic book history of comics for IDW, which is a fantastic mini or maxi series, 12 issues. And really, Fred and Ryan did so much great research and can speak as a true comic book historian about Stan's career. And already, like I said, we already had the talk scheduled. So it was great. Nice extemporaneous conversation about Stan's career. Really enjoyed it. And I did say, all right, late tonight, I'm going to put it out. And I was just wiped out. And you know, had a few other conversations with creator friends and we're all commiserating about Stan. Also met and had dinner with the great Mike Gold of DC fame and First Comics fame. Old great editor. He was the original editor of Suicide Squad and Hawk World and the Mike Grell Green Arrow stuff, Longbow Hunters and the regular series. Tremendous guy. And I was just wiped out. So even though I promised that it would be out late tonight, I didn't end up releasing it until Tuesday morning. And I sometimes will do that. And like I said, I don't have a regular, if I already said it earlier, because I had a conversation with another person this afternoon. And, yeah, I'm like, you know, sometimes I don't have a dedicated day of every Monday new word balloon. So, but my audience seems to forgive me. And again, I think I put it on enough content that it's like, all right, you know, it'll be out within 24 hours of me saying so, usually.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is the fact that you've been around so long, people have come to depend on you. I think probably that, you know, make sure that you're consistent and that you're, you know,
when oh, yeah.
Say so, it's in the beginning when you're trying to build the audience is when it's, you know, most important.
100%. 100%. No, you're right. And again, don't have that problem right now. Although I did start a new boxing podcast and I started it in late September and I've only put out 5 episodes so far. And actually, when we're done tonight, I'll be putting out another one. So.
Well, let's shift here to to some favorite memories, John. Some of the big names you've had on your show. I doing this for the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, and specifically the podcast for the last 4, I cover a lot of shows, saw Stan at many shows, never had the opportunity to meet him, and probably knew this day was coming and it would end up being a situation where it would be a regret. But just, you know, kind of envious of guys like you that got in on the ground floor, even before, maybe right as comics were starting to become the center of pop culture. Did you ever have Stan on the show? What are some of the other big?
No, I'm sorry to say not. And never really had an opportunity to have a face to face with him. Obviously a huge admirer. But again, when I would see him at conventions, certainly had enough security around him that I couldn't just approach him,
right,
wasn't in the same green rooms as him to get a chance to meet him, but certainly admired him. It's funny, one classic creator that has not been on the show but has been very kind to me at conventions is Jim Steranko. And I love Jim Steranko. Mm-hmm. And I've been a gigantic fan since I was a child. And he almost teases me with and it's fine. It's like almost a game that we play of – Jim, you know I'm going to ask you to come on. Well, not yet, John, but I'll have the right project. And when I do, I'm like, okay, you know, and that's fine. But as far as the, like, for me, it obviously is, like, my favorite guests have always been the classic writers and artists that I loved truly as a child. So the Marty Pascos, the Elliot Maggins, as far as DC writers, Neil Adams, Denny O'Neill, certainly. Gene Colan, it was so great to get him so early on, and he couldn't have been sweeter. And I like talking to you. You got like a Bob Costas quality, which is a huge compliment,
yeah,
obviously.
Definitely.
What a great interviewer. So, you know, Gene was terrific. I'm trying to think of the old timers. I mentioned Elliot Maggin, of course. Walt Simonson. I mean, Walter Simonson is such a great guy. I call him Walter because I know he prefers. I mean, he's cool with people calling him Walt because we all did reading the comics. but it's Walt. You know, I know he likes Walter, so I always make sure that I correct myself and say Walter Simonson. Tremendous guy. And Louise, too, a wonderful woman. God, who else? I mean, that's good. I mentioned Neil Adams, of course. Neil's great. Neil and Steranko, you know, they've got giant egos, but they can back it up with incredible talent.
Yeah.
So, you know, Neil can come off very pompous and counting every dollar, and, you know, it's $5 to even just get a signature from him. But if you buy something from him, it's free, which is fine. Good deal. And I love Neil. Neil's a genius. Neil is a genius. And he has – I love talking to the old-timers because they have perspective. And they can tell you about – and, like, Walter is a classic example of that. When he was doing the Avengers Monthly with Bendis a few years ago, I was on a Marvel press call. And it was mostly other bloggers. And I was the only podcaster that was on the thing. And I said, Walter, what do you think of this new – 24/7 comic book news cycle, because you've been around the business since the 70s and you grew up with the fanzines, the original, really what we do. I mean, the comic fans were doing it in the fanzines and doing a tremendous job of covering the industry. So I'm like, hey, what do you think of all that? And I wish I could remember some specific quotes that he said, but it's like, you know, to get that opportunity to talk to these people who are still active in the business. And again, have the perspective of the changes. And with Neil, it's always an inside baseball conversation. And it's been a while. I've got to kind of bother him. Again, I don't think he remembers me, and that's totally fine. And in fact, has graduated to regular conversations with Kevin Smith. And I don't know if he's talked to Hardwick when Hardwick was still doing his podcast. So, you know, there's still a demarcation line in terms of getting people and not getting people. Jim Lee will talk to Kevin Smith. I've never had Jim Lee on. I would love to, but it's just, he hasn't made himself available. What can I say? DiDio, it's been a while, and it's mostly schedules that's kept me from having him back, but I'm always friendly with Dan and I'm happy to see him. Marvel has been ridiculously kind to me, and I could pretty much talk to everybody except Kevin Feige. And Dan Buckley, the publisher, could not be sweeter and a great guy. And he's like, John, I trust you. But I could easily casually say something that the stock and, you know, holders might have a problem with because I revealed a marketing thing 3 months before I should have. It happened with me and DiDio. And it was such an innocuous book. But he's like, oh, guess what? I got Sergio Aragonés and, oh, I forget who the artist was, doing Batlash. And I'm like, oh, that's great. And literally, Paul Levitz is like, what are you doing, like, saying on a podcast that we got Batlash coming up? We're not ready to promote that. And it's like, oh, Jesus, Dan, I'm so sorry. You know, I'm sure you were just enthusiastic to tell me about it. So, you know, it's stuff like that. But anyway, yeah, no, it's always the old timers. So, yeah, I mean, there's a good list of people.
Now, what about conventions? You know, you don't do the interviews on the floor anymore. You know, we talked about that. But what's your opinion, you know, again, just from covering it as an entertainment journalist for so long, you know, when you started out, it was, you know, a few big conventions here and there. And now, you know, it went from there to a convention every weekend. And now we're at multiple conventions every weekend. I mean, it's gotten to be ridiculous. I covered way too many shows this year. And I think I went to like 13 shows this year, and I'm cutting way back this year because it's just too much travel and time away from family and everything. But I keep waiting for the bubble to burst. I mean, can this continue?
I think it can, because I think each convention has represented a different flavor. And now Heidi McDonald really put it well at Publishers Weekly when she was still there, and on her podcast as well. There are CAFs, comic art festivals, that are still pure comic book shows. And I think those are great. And also I think, like Terrificon in Connecticut and some of these other mid-sized conventions, they will have autographs, but they are still comic book centric. And I also think now with the Heroes and Villain Cons that Steve Amell has created, and certainly the Ace comic shows that the Sheamus brothers have now created, the former guys in charge of Wizard, they're different shows, and comic books may or may not be there. I know for the Heroes and Villain shows that Amell does, he'll have artists, but he will have conceptual artists that work on the TV shows or the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And there aren't any comic book creators there. So there are different audiences that are coming to Comic Cons for different reasons. And certainly San Diego has always represented that. I've only been going to San Diego for 12 years. But in 2006, that was my first observation, was that the anime fans are having a completely different experience than I was having and that the Hall H people were having. And that's fine. That's excellent, especially for a gigantic show like San Diego or even New York, where especially New York, where it's a show that's too big for one convention center. And it's very frustrating as a fan. But again, they're trying to accommodate everybody, so I get it. And there really is no other facility in Manhattan proper to hold it where it would make sense. So it's interesting to see the changes. It's interesting to see the shows that were so reliable with a specific identity that now do cater more to the TV and film group, because that's where the influx of new fans are coming in. I understand that from an economic standpoint. What I hope will happen is that a smaller regional show will take its place for the hardcore comic book fan. And that's why truly Terrificon, I keep raving about it. And again, I'll even full disclosure, they bought advertising on Word Balloon, but the programming they provided was fantastic and it was great. And truly you'll hear it on the panels that I did. These were all, and the Rapid panel is a classic example. That's the thing, man. Like you want, I at least as a fan, I want a bunch of creators talking about, I wrote this character, I drew this character, these are the fun things that happened, these are the fun behind-the-scenes stories. Good Lord, Starlin and Roy Thomas had this great conversation about Marvel Cosmic, and Roy didn't have time to do Captain Marvel anymore, so he handed it off to Starlin, and Starlin obviously made, you know, the original Marvel explode with all these ideas, and Starlin's like, you know, you saved my ass because Stan was going to fire me because he didn't like what Steve Gerber and I were doing on Iron Man,
yeah,
because we were making it funny.
Yep.
And he was pissed. So luckily, Roy hands it off. I'm getting all this like in this like great panel. And truly, at one point I say, I'm like, good Lord, this is such a pleasure being a fly on the wall and letting you guys just tell these amazing stories. That's what I'm in it for. And those, and so that's the thing, is many conventions that continue to pop up, because even Terrificon is not 10 years old. I think it's only 3 or 4 years old. But it's a great regional show. It's in Connecticut. It's close enough for a lot of the Eastern Seaboard states to get to and everything. And it's like, hey, if you're an old school comic book fan, this is your show. If you want to see Chris Evans and all the Marvel, you know, MCU stars, God bless you. There's going to be a show for you. So I don't know. There might be an oversaturation bubble, I suppose. But I know a lot of the good shows, if again, it's much like our podcast. If we put out good content and these shows put out good content, they're going to have a regular audience. They'll come back.
All right. I'm going to put you on the spot now, John. let's ask about some predictions on the future of podcasting, the comic industry, and really pop culture in general. Like, how long can comics be at the center of pop culture?
How long will comics what?
How long can comics be at the center of pop culture?
Well, I think we have survived a few movie bombs that I don't think the genre will go away. I do think also that the advances in streaming that we're all seeing, I mean, there's a lot of streaming channels, and certainly all of them won't survive. But the fact that Warner's and Disney, the content, you know, the IP holders, are going to have their own channels. I think we're kind of bulletproof as a, if you want to say specifically superheroes as a genre, because we know comic books encompasses a lot of various genres. I think everything's going to be okay. I did fear, remember in 2013, it was like Scott Pilgrim and the second Wolverine movie and a couple, and the second Spider-Man, Andrew Garfield movie. And they all were kind of there, and it was like too much. And I agree, man. It's like, I didn't end up seeing a lot of those movies this summer because I just didn't have time. Again, because of streaming and the ability to watch it when it's convenient, I think all that's shifting. The budgets might go smaller because obviously they're spending hundreds of millions, and if they're not getting a return, that's okay. Blade was made for a reasonable budget, and it was a great hit. You know, the first Blade movie back in 97 or 98. And obviously the television shows prove they can do it on a smaller scale and still be entertaining. It all comes down to story. So I think from the big television and film, you know, places, I think we're fine. And again, even the bombs that DC movies have had, I think it's bulletproof. It's again, it's three years away from fixing it, and they will fix it. I love the rumor that's out there that because of the failures of Henry Cavill as Superman, that they're considering a CW show with Tyler Hoechlin or whatever his name is, as Superman. That's great. He's a fantastic Superman. Yes, please. That's wonderful. A great idea. So that's that side. Comic book podcasting, like I said, I think as long as the content is there, we're still getting people that are new to podcasting. Oh, I never really thought about listening to a podcast anymore. And truly, I get new listeners every month, and it is such a thrill. And I see the results in my, you know, God, I never heard of you until I saw you at Terrificon or whatever convention. I'm going to start listening to your show, and now I'm hooked. Great. Fantastic. So I think that future, and then comics themselves, they will adapt to whatever, price point makes sense from a content standpoint. I think, man, I'll tell you, I thought $3 was asking a lot for a 20-page story a couple years ago. And now, obviously, there are as many $4.99 books from DC and Marvel as there are $3.99 books. I love that Image, very smartly, especially with their first trades, are very price conscious and think about $9.99 or $14.99 trades, because I do think that's great. And again, there is this citizen comic book publishing initiative alongside our citizen media, as far as being podcasters and vloggers and the like, to show that, yeah, you can gather an audience without having to go to DC and Marvel if your concept is strong. So I feel good. And I don't know what's going to happen to the monthly. Maybe we'll, you know, it'll be digital first. And then if you want to trade, people still like books and like holding. But God, there was a great, and this is probably slightly inappropriate, but I'll say it, Eric, because it cracked me up when I heard it. And they asked Stan about what do you think of digital comics? And he said, well, much like breasts, I'd rather have one in my hand than read about it, in, you know, on my tablet or look at it on my tablet or whatever. And it's true. I think books are like that. Terrible. Shame on me. So my apologies, ladies and women of the listening audience. I mean no disrespect. John at wordballoon.com if you want to email me here. How dare you? It's okay.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think from the time that I came into reading comics about 40 years ago, there was talk of the death of the medium, and here we are 40 years later, and yeah. I feel like it's still – it's a golden age of story, man. There's more great comics out than ever.
100%, man. No, you're – and long. Truly, when I came back in 99 and in the early 2000s, a friend of mine owned a store, and he was a neighborhood friend when we were both growing up. And I'm like, seriously – has it ever been better? And it's only gotten better because of all the genres, because of all the new voices, both artistically and writing. No, man, it's great. And also, it does not surprise me that, you know, yesterday's comic book writers are today's Robert Kirkman's and Brian Bendis's that are cutting these deals. Jeff Loeb, God bless him, man. I mean, a great, great comic book writer and now the head of Marvel Television. I mean, no, this is... And it's again, it's just the beginning. And it was so funny because I do remember conversations, like I said, since 2013 of, aren't you worried about oversaturation? And I'm like, no, man, say that to the Western. The Western started in silent movies. And other than like there was a little period in the 80s where Westerns kind of almost went away. And then Silverado, this Lawrence Kasdan movie, brought everyone back to the Western. And the Western's doing fine. And that's the thing. So, superheroes might diminish slightly in the pop culture zeitgeist, but I think we have a firm, as fans and also the content makers, we have a firm grip on this is modern mythology. And I think people will still want to hear these stories and read these stories and watch these stories. And also, good Lord, as we know, they're scratching the surface of both the DC and Marvel universe, let alone the properties that Dark Horse has, the IDWs and some of these others. I mean, God, you know, Lemire making the Black Hammer deal this week. And God, I'm sure you love Black Hammer as well. What a great comic. So everyone is just, and also the success of Deadpool. I don't mean to, forgive me if this is going on too long, but the success of Deadpool And the idea of you don't have to tell just an origin story, but you can also tell good R-rated stories. And you can tell, you know, superhero stories as a mystery, Ant-Man as a comedy. You know, it's very flexible as a genre to imprint other story ideas onto it. So, and again, we are at the Incredibles, obviously. You know, just any, iteration of storytelling through movies or television, we're just getting started with superheroes.
Yeah, and it really does show the strength of the medium. Sequential storytelling, the impact of the graphics with a great narrative, it translates. Yep. It will capture you, and it's why I do what I do. It's why I believe that, you know, what I always tell people is, you know, the people that say I'm not a dog person? I'm like, oh, you probably haven't met the right dog. Maybe you're one of those people that just likes dogs on a case-by-case basis, yeah, right? If you tell me you don't like comics, that is a challenge. I will find the right comic that you will fall in love with the medium, and then it's a gateway, right? And I've been accused of being
100%.
I've been accused of being a comic book evangelist for these beliefs. You know what? I'll wear that, John. I will wear that badge, and I'll wear it proudly.
I hear you, man. No, and in fact, some of my friends that I've grown up with, and, you know, again, these are people in their 40s and 50s now. And God, I remember when like the Justice League cartoon happened, and my one of my best friends, his wife is like, why are you watching this cartoon? And he's like, honey, you don't understand. The writing is incredible. And he's just like, I know this sounds ridiculous, but I am telling you, it says Y7. Why are you watching? And it's like, you don't understand. And also, like, and that same wife, my friend and I were all together, and a comic book store happened to be near this restaurant we were at. And I said, you know, do you mind if we poke in for a second while we're waiting for our reservation? Sure. So we walk in, and truly she saw the sophistication of art these days in comic books. And she's like, was completely honest. And she's like, wow, I had no idea.
Right.
She's like, I'm thinking of Sunday Funnies.
Yep.
And again, not to be mean about these cartoonists, but like High and Lois, Beetle Bailey, you know, Mort Walker. And now I'm forgetting who did High and Lois, but you know, the simple kind of Peanuts,
yep,
sort of illustration. And instead she's seeing Dave McKean, who's a classic guy, but you know, the modern, you know, Alex Ross. And it's like, oh my God, this looks like a romance novel cover. I'm like, yeah. And check out the interior. Oh my God. And it was Kingdom Come. And you know, so it's beautifully drawn, a classic, obviously, you know, or Watchmen. I didn't know that was a comic book. Hellboy. I didn't know that was a comic book.
Yep. Hear it all the time.
And it's, you know, those are the things that these people are now. And again, it's a slow process. And no, you're not going to, it's back to that thing of like my patrons. It might only be 1% of the movie going audience that finally really does accept comics and goes, no, this is actually valid. And because people are reading less in general,
mm-hmm,
but you will still get that, you know, person that gets that artistic inspiration as a consumer, as just a reader, that will see today's comic books and go, holy crap, what's going on here? This is amazing. And that's great. You know, it's fine. I think both companies know the value of their comic book divisions as intellectual property laboratories, because they always need to have new ideas. And really, look at what Vertigo is pumping out this year, and their brand new books and stuff. And it's like, okay, I don't know what kind of audience it's going to get from a readership standpoint, but these are quality ideas.
Definitely.
And Vertigo isn't just regurgitating the same kind of horror and suspense and crime stuff that they were always known for. And it was great stuff, but maybe, you know, all right, it's time for another cultural shift in Vertigo. And I think they're on the right path, for example.
Yeah, I mean, they've got some great, from Border Town to American Carnage from Brian Edward Hill, Hexwives, yep, from Ben Blacker's amazing, Goddess Mode, yep, from Zoe, yep, Quinn. I mean, I'm excited for all of these titles. It's like
100%, man.
Mark Doyle is doing,
and same with, and truly, we haven't talked much about Marvel and what they're doing. I really think CB is the right guy to be editor.
Agree.
I know that he had his little controversial moment back in the earlier aughts when he was writing under an assumed name, and I understand that controversy, but I, as a guy, I know him. I know he loves comics. I know he has the right temperament to deal with creators. And I really do believe that, you know, I like what Marvel's putting out. I mean, God, Nick Spencer's Spider-Man is great. It's a big departure from what Slott was doing. Jason Aaron is still kicking ass. I think Jonathan Hickman is great. That I'm glad he's still with the company. Matt Rosenberg is fantastic. Donny Cates is fantastic. Cena Grace is fantastic. I mean, that's, you know, again, shame on me, all men. But you know, Kelly, Of course, I'm forgetting Kelly's last name right now.
Kelly Thompson.
But she's a, yes, Kelly Thompson is terrific. You know, Kate Leth is doing great work. I mean, that's the thing, man. We're getting great voices in comics. Certainly, I'm excited about Kelly Sue DeConnick coming back to DC and doing Aquaman next month. It's a very good time. And I do think the companies are listening to the fans when they said, we want more representation, not just on the page, but artists and writers. And I think they're listening. And I think CB in particular, I think he is a good guy. And, you know, again, I understand people that might have had problems with, again, what he chose to do when he was writing. But that was 12 years ago. People get older and they do mature and shouldn't be harangued for the rest of their lives for a mistake they might have made at a younger period.
Yeah. You know, I don't really have an opinion about, you know, what he did. I didn't know about it at the time, so I can't really speak to it. But I'll say this. I've met CB a few times, and there's no one that loves comic books more than that guy. And I feel like Marvel has really turned a corner. And I'll just add one title to those that you mentioned that it's absolutely incredible. I don't know if you're reading Immortal Hulk by Al Ewing, but that book.
Yes, I'm so glad you mentioned it. It is amazing.
So good.
Oh, the tone. Bruce Jones had a similar vibe, yep. I think, you know, back in the like 2004 or five,
yep,
when he
I
was
remember
doing
that,
it.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, it's that kind of the Hulk is scary again, as he should be. And it's so good. No, I love it. And it's so smart and beautifully drawn. And I love Alex's covers for the Hulk. No, it's such a great complete book. Ta-Nehisi Coates, I'm enjoying his Captain America. What else? Charles Soule, I'm very sorry that he's leaving Daredevil,
yep,
but what
too.
A great run. You know, I mean, that's the thing, man. There's good stuff happening at Marvel again. And, I was just telling a friend of mine that I had coffee with before we were talking. And I was saying, I'll be interested to see how they handle events moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
I know that they're going to do another weekly Avenger event, but I hope they get away from the five part event book. That's the 2-hour movie. If you really want to get into the minutiae, I'll use a Dan Slott example, the Clone Conspiracy. It's like, well, yeah, that's the Clone Conspiracy book itself. That's where you get in the highlights. If you really want the meat, you have to read Amazing Spider-Man as well. And my feeling is, hey, man, not cool.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Please, you know, then make the Clone Conspiracy 8 issues or 10 issues.
Yeah.
But don't make me buy 2 books to get the whole story. That's especially, again, in this high-priced environment that we're in right now for the monthlies. And that's why that is my one – God only knows what's going to happen to the monthly physical comics. They might survive in digital. I don't know. I honestly don't know, because you're asking a lot when it's $5 and up for a 20-page comic book. That's a lot of money for very little entertainment.
Well, last thing I'll say, I just wanted to mention this about Immortal Hulk, because Al Ewing was one of the ones that wanted to sit down at New York. He's like, I don't know when I'll have time. So we sat down and talked.
Oh, that's great.
And one of the things that he talked about when he was pitching for this race, he wanted to take the Hulk and go back to that very first cover. And remember how it's in the question mark, man or monster?
Yep.
Which was Stan's idea. And he's like, and that's, that's the impetus of the series. That's where I started. And it's been spectacular.
Absolutely, man. No, it's that got his first issue. Was so fantastic. And that's what you want. You want a cunning Hulk.
Yep.
I think it's great. And again, it only makes him that much more dangerous. That's why Greg Pak, when he did World War Hulk, and especially when Planet Hulk was first, then World War Hulk, when he came back and was smart and looking for revenge and just systematically takes down the Marvel Universe, it's like, yeah, that's what you – I mean, I love Hulk Smash. But a cunning Hulk is that much more dangerous
and that much more scary.
Yes. And again, exactly. 100%. You know, I have a recreation of the first cover that Dick Ayres, I got to do before he passed away. One of the great original Marvel bullpen artists. And yeah, it's one of my favorite pieces, is that wonderful Is He Man, Is He Monster picture. Amazing.
That's awesome. Well, John, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. Is there anything else you want to share with our listeners, whether it be social media or, you know, other – you mentioned your boxing podcast.
Sure.
The floor is yours. Promote away, my friend.
Oh, thanks, man. Well, yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at John Word Balloon. I'm on Facebook under John Suntress. I'm under Instagram under Word Balloon. I have an occasional Tumblr page that I should probably post to a lot more. I got to get over my weight consciousness as far as putting myself on camera. I keep flirting with the idea of more video content, but I don't know. Like I said, shame on me. But yeah, wordballoon.com is the place to go for all my content. But again, it's on iTunes. I am with Spreaker and Blog Talk Radio, and I also have episodes at SoundCloud as well. So you can pretty, like I said, wherever you need to find a podcast, you should be able to find Word Balloon. And I hope you'll come and listen. Again, I do the kind of conversation that Jason and I do, mostly with comic book creators. And I'm pleased to say that I think it's an entertaining show, and I think you'll like it.
Yeah, 100% listeners. If you're not listening to Word Balloon, I mean, it is the comic book podcast to listen to. And John's an inspiration to me. The fact he's been doing it so long helps me want to continue doing what I'm doing. And as much as I want to improve, I'll straight out ask a creator. In fact, I asked Tom King at New York Comic Con this last year, hey, man, like you've been on the show a few times and let me ask you, what can I do? Like, how can I, where can I improve? And you know what he says? You know what? Just listen to John Suntrees. Do what he does.
Oh my God. What an incredible compliment from Tom. Who's a sweetheart of the guys, I'm sure you already know. Yeah. And dude, honestly, I did the same thing in my first year with Mike Waringo, of all people, because he was so enthusiastic when he would come back on. And he was such an important person to me and doing the same thing. Am I doing all right? Do you have any suggestions as someone being interviewed? Am I asking the wrong questions in any way? Should I go into an area that you'd like? And he was such a great critical ear at a very early part of Word Balloon. And it really, you know, encouraged me that no, you're doing fine. And, you know, again, I luckily had the sports interview background before I started doing this, but yeah, that's great. And Jesus, Tom's a sweetheart, and I've known him since Once a Crowded Sky was his first novel.
Yeah,
and that's when
too.
I first met him through Tom Fowler. And I'm so happy with the way his career has unfolded. What an incredible voice in comics. And again, man, following the toughest act in the world, Scott Snyder's Batman. It's just like when Brad Meltzer was doing Green Arrow. Nobody wanted the gig after Kevin Smith. Are you nuts? Good luck. And thankfully, both in the case of Brad with Green Arrow and certainly Tom, who's, you know, got 100 times more of the body of work that Brad makes the time for to make his comics. But, oh my God, I just love. And again, it was what a surprise at how amazing Tom's Batman run has been. And good Lord, we're only at the really just over the halfway point of the story. We still got almost, you know, another 40 or so issues to get through to find out exactly where this story is going. Well, honestly, the marriage was a great, you know, pull the rug out from under us moment. But, oh God, that last page. And it's like, wow, even Thomas Wayne is on this thing. What the hell does this mean? What can it possibly mean? Very exciting.
Yeah, awesome. And just goes to show, again, listen to John. He loves, you can hear it in his voice. He loves comics.
Hey, man. Absolutely. Yeah. Calvin Reed, by the way, real fast, Publishers Weekly guy, he's in his 60s and has the same enthusiasm we have. So that's been reassuring as well. No, man, you're right. Comics are amazing. And I'm happy to, again, preach from my little pulpit about it.
Yeah. And you know, John, it's been a real pleasure. The door is always open. Anytime you want to come on and talk some inside baseball, talk comic book podcasting or comics in general, the door is always open, my friend.
Thank you, Chase. No, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Congratulations on your 600th episode and continued success, as I like to say to everyone I have a good conversation with. And I mean it. No, and it sounds like you got something good going around here. I'm going to have to dig in the archive and listen to more of your interviews.
All right. Thanks so much, John. You take care.
You too, man.